Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. I trust everybody's had a good holiday, and we're starting off the new year here at New Cyber Frontier. Check out my LinkedIn page. This is Chris Gorog, your regular host, as we have some updates for the year and some thoughts as to what we'll see next year, as well as kind of a recap on 2018 and 2019. We're going to bring you in today to a conversation. It's a very candid conversation. We just loved it so much, we had to put it on. But it's Abe and I really just having a conversation after one of the recording sessions about our life and things that are going on in cybersecurity, and kind of what we thought was really the most important pieces. But I think you'll really like it, and we hope you have a great day. We're going to join you in now here to this conversation in progress. Starting in about 2007, I've been on four different standards working groups.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to Eric, when your last guest, about that today. And I was on the Trusted Computing group with NIST, basically before the federal government said, we're going to dump a bunch of money into NIST and have them be the center of cybersecurity.
Where'd you have to travel for those meetings?
Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So, Gaithersburg.
Yep.
And, but anyway, there was about 30 to 40 people that would show up at the biannual meetings. Very deep experts.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
The dark, deep guys that come out of the basement and you know, they had potting soil that was
definitely
and seeds growing out of places on them.
3.14.
Yeah. But brilliant. Oh my God, brilliance. And around 2007, 2008, when that housing bubble kind of popped,
yeah.
There was kind of hidden behind that time was the whole NERC SIP beginnings, the critical infrastructure debacle that, hey, foreign nation states were in our critical infrastructure, and we had no control, basically.
We were using a lot of cover stories, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of buried in the housing, the economic crash. Yeah. Anyway, a good portion of that money went into the NIST effort, and that's when they founded the Smart Grid Interoperability Panel.
I remember that.
Well, anyway, I was at the meeting before that, it was like 37 people. The next meeting, they scheduled it in conjunction with that working group, and there was others that met together, you know, and the next meeting had over 4,000 people.
Wow.
They came in, they ate caviar, they drank up all the wine, they ate the little
chocolates,
you know. They talked about what platform we should be on, like, should we be on Google or should we be on Cisco? Or, you know, they argued over who should be the chair of the group and who's fit to be the chair of the group. And all of them were, you know, either Republican or Democrat and bucking for office. Mm. My point is that
nothing got
years
done.
Went by, and that the group that was actually the technical experts went away when the money came in. And at the same time that the federal government got in pushing it, the bottom fell out.
Yeah.
And it was like, nothing happened.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Well, it's interesting. General Hayden, when I worked at NSA, used to say, when I called a meeting and people wanted to have their say, I could fill Camden Yards, you know, because we were right there by Baltimore. And he'd point up and say, I could feel Camden Yards. When it came to actually making a decision and doing something, I was always very lonely sitting in the room by myself.
Exactly. You know. So this, I was saying at the lead into that's this blockchain development community mm-hmm. that we put together. Exactly the point we're taking. We're doing something.
Yeah.
We're like, you know, we started a cybersecurity effort a couple of years ago in Colorado yeah. Springs. The governor got behind it. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of food eaten, mm-hmm. a lot of drinks, a lot of generals come speak about what everybody should be doing. We're starting to do something.
Good.
And that's the approach we're taking is, you know, no matter what, I could spend five more years on the four standards groups I did, just everybody talking about what should be done and have the discussion about whether we should be using WebEx or Cisco or Zoom 100 times and 5 minutes of actual work getting done on every call. And, you know.
And we wonder why we're so far behind.
Basically, that's the thing is there's not enough people saying, let's make a decision, let's do something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I pulled in just with my students. I said, okay, we're going to start. When I started, I said, we're going to start a senior project. I pulled in my senior project class, and I opened it up for anybody, and I brought a couple other clubs that were at the university, and I said, no, we're not going to just talk about cybersecurity. We're not going to just talk about blockchain. We're going to start implementing something. And I pulled, you know, out my dissertation work that I'm in the process of, and I said, look, here's what I need from this group. We're going to put together a theory of operation of what we're doing with the state's governance program.
Sure.
We're going to make something that works to throw something out there. I call it the straw man effect, you yeah. know? You have to throw a straw man out there for everybody to burn it. But you know how often the final work looks like the original straw man?
Yeah, imagine that. Yep. Because everybody just wants to get their say. And it's not even as much a bunch of people sitting around wringing of hands. It's really personalities getting in the way, perhaps, and agendas. And
exactly.
Instead of this community sense that, you know, I have a heart for, you have a heart for, and we see a lot in this, I think in this city is starting to pick up this concept of this is a community effort, not a competitive effort.
Yes. And we have to do that. And that's the one thing I would even push back at some of the leadership in this effort now is, you've excluded too many people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need certainly. To come back to everybody's in this and everybody needs to be in it. And you know, the community in large sometimes doesn't know what's going on in yeah. some of those efforts right now.
Yeah.
I know you've seen this too.
Of course.
It's like
somebody be like
it's a black hole.
They're doing what?
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know,
are they doing
yeah.
what?
I had a guest here earlier. And the discussion was just on, you know, sort of cybersecurity education for young people, high school, you know, age and perhaps younger. And there are multiple little, you know, fledgling efforts going on all over the place and yet common goal. And, you know, what greater benefit could be found in unification of those efforts? And that's just one example.
I agree with that. And I know the guest you're talking about, Dr. Hoffman, right? Definitely moving forward in the K-12
yeah.
education.
Yep.
And I know Dr. Mary Graff, mm-hmm. amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh my God, we need to pull all those resources together, you
yeah.
know.
We're going to do some stuff with her this summer, so we're excited here at SecureSet. So.
Oh, good, mm-hmm. good, good. I'm kind of in some of my roles, I teach, and other roles, I lead some research efforts. Mm-hmm. And
the blockchain development community is bringing those two together as a kind of a, like I said, that piece that we're actually doing something.
Okay.
You know?
So, tangible catalyst. That, I mean, you know, you talked about how you were frustrated with all these talking heads and no action, but what was the tangible catalyst that gave you the boost you needed to start it? And then what's your initial charter?
Running out of time.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
I had some medical problems a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
About 8 years ago now, somebody told me that you might have a shelf life.
Wow.
I won't tell you how many years they told me that shelf life was, but it's changed my direction to saying, you know, I'm not wasting any yeah. more time. What can I do in the time I might? It's like it changes that perspective.
Yeah.
In
it's
you.
No longer some game, some pie in the sky. This is real life. This is your life.
Uh-huh.
And this is the legacy that you want to.
I don't care about your politics.
Yeah.
I don't care about your affiliations. Let's make it work.
Yeah.
And we have an opportunity now to be at the fledgling state of an industry that I think is the organizing, and cybersecurity is in general is the base organization to the technological era.
Sure.
And a story I always tell, and it's probably a good, I've never told this on the air, but how many of you would know the name Samuel Andrews? Do you know who that is?
Not
so
sure.
Samuel Andrews was a chemist who invented a method of standard making oil usable from different wells together.
Okay. Okay.
So Samuel Andrews invented this process called fractalate distillation.
Hmm.
Most people have never heard of that when
sure.
I say it either. And it was actually during the Civil War when he came up with this.
Wow.
But it wasn't until late 1880s, 86, I think 1891, he actually got a company together and said, you know, what we can solve, what we're doing is solving the oil industry's problem. Because every well drilled, thousands of years oil had been known about, but everywhere you drew it out of the ground was different.
Yeah.
And you couldn't use it together.
Blending.
You had to make a whole set of products around oil from one well.
Right, right.
Okay. So Samuel Andrews, I don't know if it was by mistake or you know how much he went in, but he was solving the industry problem. And he changed the world and made the transportation revolution. You might ask how? Well, he got together with his partner and they formed a company in 1891 called Standard Oil. His partner's name was John Rockefeller.
Well, I've heard a couple of those names, yeah.
But the technology behind what they did wasn't a new, let's do something great, let's make a new computer, let's start a new, make a car. It was, let's make everything usable together.
Yeah.
Let's solve the industry problem.
Cooperation?
Right now, we have an industry problem in cybersecurity that is very similar. It's siloed everywhere. We don't know how things work together. We don't know how they relate. Everywhere they write code, it follows a different structure. They don't work together. That's the industry problem.
Hmm.
And that's what we have the opportunity to solve here.
Yeah.
And that's why when you add the pieces, we've known about cryptology and scrambling data for thousands of years.
Right, literally.
we've known now about making hash algorithms and signatures with digital signatures.
Yeah.
We got asymmetric cryptography in 1976 with Mr. Whitfield Diffie, which I had the opportunity to meet.
Neat.
Great
guy.
I
think you told me about that.
I'm trying to get him on the show. I have a hard time getting a hold of his peoples.
Yeah.
But he's getting up there in years. But in really it was 1991, the first time that the other set of tools was given to us. But it didn't become popular until 2008, 2009 with blockchain, with Bitcoin. And that is the last piece that we need to organize the cybersecurity industry. And that's blockchain. And it's not anything new. It's a technology used in conjunction.
Yeah.
It's got strengths, it's got weaknesses. Cryptocurrency is not the strongest use case for it.
No.
And
just seems the most talked about, but
It's that made people see this as money.
Mm-hmm.
It made people see cybersecurity as money. And what they changed is cybersecurity puts the no in innovation. But what blockchain does is it allows us to positively package and sell pieces of cybersecurity.
Yeah.
And make a positive, quantifiable return on investment for the first time.
By
it changes and takes that no out of innovation for cybersecurity and puts it and says, we can sell trust.
Yeah.
And that's all that Bitcoin is doing. They're selling trust.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And that's all that Bitcoin is doing. They're selling trust. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely nothing there. You can't. People always like, can I hold a Bitcoin? Can I print it out? Can I take it off there? No, it's just the trusted communication that they're selling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's a, you know, very similar though, if you think about it, to, you know, what is a dollar? What is a dollar bill? You know, it's just simply a representation of something. And so,
yeah, if you took the paper, mm-hmm. you can't even eat it. It doesn't give you nutrients.
No value. might be able to use it for a fire or something like that if you're cold, but. So it's
and it costs more to make than the what's printed on it, the $1.
Oh, yeah. Positively.
Yeah.
I imagine that's probably why they're phasing out the penny, same thing. But this is sort of a revolution of an old concept. But again, like you said, that's only one segment. There's so much more to this, and so many better use cases. You know, obviously the state of Colorado has recognized that thanks to your efforts and Senator Lambert and others.
I think what I saw in the state is a extreme desire to lead the technological era.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think that really, when you see Governor Hickenlooper that made the efforts in cybersecurity 3 years ago or so, that's really what was started there. Wasn't we're gonna do a big cyber thing. It was, we're gonna start a mindset that Colorado wants to lead the way in something, okay? Mm-hmm. And that is the biggest blue ocean right now. You know, you hear the blue ocean strategy. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna pick something to expand into, pick something that has endless growth in whatever direction you're going.
Oh yeah.
That way you're not limited.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't buy a paper company right now. I wouldn't buy a check. Book making company.
Dunder
right
Mifflin's for sale.
I wouldn't buy a magazine printing company right now because people are buying less of them.
Yeah.
But if you pick a blue ocean, you know, something that you can go in that direction for almost ever, at least in your foreseeable lifetime.
Sure.
That's what the state and the legislators on both sides bought into.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in the Senate, and then we went through several committees and then to the House. 97% voted yes. And you know who didn't vote, weren't voting against it. They were making a statement about something else that they didn't want, you know, or some other bill, they're doing their protest vote. It wasn't that I don't think any, there was one person I remember that kind of dissented. He said, you know what I don't like about this? This is what he said. The government has too much control.
Hmm.
And I was like, you know, that was the only interesting takeaway I heard talking to all the legislators, as somebody that actually had a point that showed that he looked beyond what they saw in the hype and said, Now, there was many ways, and even later we talked to him and he said, oh, okay, I kind of see what you're doing. But his initial statement is he doesn't want the government to have that much power.
Right.
And that's also something that resonates in Colorado.
Yeah. Well, and
that kind of the same reason they legalized marijuana here.
Yeah.
It's almost like a, hey, we... we can live free, we can live independent, we're our own state. Sovereignty, I guess, is what you call it.
Sure. Well, and it's, you know, individual sovereignty, which is, you know, it's so funny. We're going the exact opposite direction in a lot of ways than Europe. We've talked about GDPR so often. I mean, literally, the whole point of GDPR was to put the ownership of private data back in the hands of the individual.
And that's what, when we talk about blockchain and packaging and selling cybersecurity, we package and sell individual privacy along with it.
Yeah.
And we actually take the control away from some of the big companies that might misuse your data.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
To the point where in our culture, where we've kind of done the opposite of GDPR, we're supporting big companies' right to have the individual's
everything.
Data at the cost of, well, that individual signed off on the policy to use it, then the company should own it. That's kind of the approach that our legislators at the national level have taken.
Do you fear that some of these big companies will send the black sedans late at night to rough you up for challenging their monopolies?
Well, you know what? Anybody that is losing $1 billion doesn't do it quietly.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And the blockchain revolution will be very disruptive to those big data companies.
Tough is what I say. I think...
At the benefit of the individual privacy. Yeah. That's the point I want to add.
Yeah.
This is for the people.
Yeah.
And that's why it isn't being adopted by some big company.
Mm-hmm.
Even the IBMs and stuff you hear getting on board.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking to say, okay, we can sell our cloud service. Their platform, we've done some tests on it, it grows so fast and so, takes up so much memory you couldn't get off their cloud if you got on it.
Wow.
And that's how they make money.
And I think too, you know, when you talk about the purchase of individual privacy, it's at the transaction level, right?
Yeah. So imagine, for example, if a medical company wanted to do research and search and find out, you know, anybody that has this type of disease, what's their trends, what's their patterns, they could just get that information anywhere right now, you know. But imagine that if they searched a blockchain application or distribute, whatever you call it, distributed trust system, and they could find out that, yes, 100,000 people that we have records of have metadata that references this type of disease. Now I have to pay them 50 cents to each one to get it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of individualized power we're talking about.
Sure, sure.
I can't pay somebody that has a big repository because it's not kept there.
Sure.
And a further is to make data sets that are unique to the person you give them. Steganography, for an example, on a data set that makes it like a library checkout. I've stamped this with your steganography pattern.
Right.
And if it gets released or misused, we can point back to who lost
it. Who did it. Yeah.
Who did it.
You know, so obviously great idea in its inception and its concept. And we think sort of from the capitalistic model, who are the worker bees? And how are they making a living doing this, working inside the blockchain world?
So the direction that we look at is a marketplace that supports many different business models.
Mm-hmm.
And think of any programs that might exist within a state system.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate transactions, patents. DMV transactions. Mm-hmm. Patents, mm-hmm. business, transactions of controlled substances, legal documents, monetary exchanges for Medicaid and Medicare. We're talking between the providers and the hospitals, insurance companies and things. All these things that we keep a database for in some individual aspect of government become put on a database where the transactions are open public record, but the private information is masked so you can't tell the private pieces of it.
Sure.
But a marketplace that now all those different use cases can use, and each person that comes in can make a business model on it. Think of the UPS store type model, where they're all doing notaries.
Right, right.
But their notaries go into a statewide marketplace blockchain.
Right.
And they're all making money off their individual efforts.
Okay.
They all have their own individual business model. That's the type of platform we're talking about, okay, where everybody has the ability once the base structure's there,
sure,
because the base structure that's needed is the cross-jurisdictional model that enables it to grow independently. Think about the one node on the internet. One internet server doesn't do you anything, but the fact that everybody can have the same internet server, the same protocols, we can all transfer between each other. That's the big marketplace.
And supremely secure, comparatively.
With basically transaction-based security mind.
Yeah, indeed. Wow, so what does it take to get that infrastructure in place, that base infrastructure?
The funny thing is, it's not that much.
All right.
Think of the fractal distalization example. Mm-hmm. It's one thing that put at the center of everything just made it all work together.
Right.
And the base pieces aren't that much. Hmm. Another example would be the highway system, okay? It was 1886 when the first automobile was patented. It was actually Daimler-Benz or Daimler over in Germany. Mm-hmm. And turn of the century, they're everywhere. It wasn't until 1911, 1914, arguably, that somebody painted a line on the road and realized that this stops accidents. Somebody put up stop signs, stop lights, all 50 years after cars are everywhere and accidents are rampant.
Yeah.
People dying everywhere. It was just, well, cost of doing business. Right now, our cost of doing business on the internet is everybody's losing your information. Cost of doing business.
Yeah.
But the structure to put all the pieces in place for that highway control aren't a lot. Lines, signs, and signals.
Sure.
I think there's three pieces. There's the external controls,
yep,
there's the individual guidance, and there's the onboard each piece.
Sure. Does this then, or did it even in the case of the oil, does this drive a major manufacturing change so that they can be adapted through this unifying factor, or can the industry still operate as they have, you know, with the best practices, as long as they have this blockchain capability?
In the terms of the information age, it's a logistics problem we have at its core, right? Mm-hmm. We make a pacemaker that can talk to your phone, so you can adjust yourself and talk your stuff, and your drug injection pump that communicates with your phone. Then we make a million pacemakers, a million injection pumps, and 10 million phones. And we don't know which one is talking to which one.
Hmm.
And on top of that, we further convoluted it by virtualizing everything, and we can't tell what's physically real or virtual.
Sure.
We can't tell what's a network, an infrastructure, or a cloud masking it. We just can't tell.
Yeah.
And we've designed it on purpose, so we can't tell. But we've separated the logistics, the logical, from the physical.
Okay.
Making that connection is what the lines, signs, and signals are. Right. And it's not that many pieces.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, and so that doesn't require such a massive sea change. It's just recognizing what those lines, signs, and signals are for each
and how
industry.
They all work together.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
What I experienced growing up in the Navy was every vendor had their different system and whatever else, and of course, everybody wanted then their systems to be able to talk to each other, and it was always the problem of integration. And so people were making money off the integration of the integration, you know. So it was always disparate systems, and we kept making disparate systems and still being faced with the same problem of interoperability. You know, we'd be with allies, or we'd be with, you know, maybe a different service who does it just a little bit differently. And there's just, you know, perpetuating this silliness without the ability to be interoperable.
And that's absolutely the problem that this new fractal distalization type of solution provides for the technological era.
Mm-hmm.
And the implementation of it is not just, oh, throw this product in there.
Yeah.
There is a design in phase, just like the phase it took of putting all the stop signs up.
Sure.
Where do you identify where you need them? Let's paint all the lines on the road. But the social control structure happens over time. Identifying all the components happens when you do it.
Sure.
That's what we're doing. We're identifying the components.
Okay.
And I won't even say we're doing it. We've already done it.
Okay.
We're at the base implementation phase of it.
And so still very innovative and Now, for the most part, governance, compliance, oversight of the blockchain technology, what does that look like right now?
So, and this is another story I always give. How are we up for time?
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes.
Another story I always tell that has to do with products that we all know, right? You know, people use Apple products that you have to download the Apple apps from the Apple Store. You have to plug their speakers in, their headphones. The things that go together work with their products. This is all done with cybersecurity controls in an ecosystem.
Okay.
Okay. That ecosystem is governed within one company in the case of Apple. This is actually what Apple was fighting with the Department of Justice and the FBI about.
Sure.
It was their whole business model, the thing that made them powerful, that the FBI wanted them to be just like everybody else who weren't in control, who had that open ecosystem.
Yep.
And they said no, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
That is what has made their products.
Yeah.
And what it does is it enables their control, it enables their logistics structure, which enables their identifiable trust between devices, quantifiable risk, and quality control. All done by cybersecurity, all done within a governance ecosystem. What we're doing is taking that governance structure and turning it over to an open source project.
Right.
The governance part of it becomes similar to what you see in DNS,
okay,
the domain name registry, how that spans the globe and is neutral and allows everybody to work in it. And that's a governance structure that all the internet falls under.
Sure.
That is a similar example of what we're talking about with an implementation like this.
Do you liken this at all? And I know he certainly was not popular when he did it, when Phil Zimmerman released all the, you know, the encryption standards. Do you remember that with PGP back in the day? Of course, it was considered, you know, almost
treasonous.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I would say it's likened to the... I wouldn't put it exactly like that. I wouldn't say it's a turning over of the NSA's.
No, because it's not content.
It's nothing like that. It is basically saying we're going to enable people to take back control.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. By making individualized privacy
possible,
which may be a little bit at the inability for government. Big brother to watch.
Sure.
And loss of visibility.
Sure.
So I would equate it to when it was like in the late 90s when Google went to HTTPS and 60% of the internet went dark in one day.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of security people upset. There was a lot of big brother type organizations that said, we need to regulate them to get rid of the encryption, to undo this.
Yeah.
That's what I would equate it to. More than a release of PGP.
So
we are making access of Big Brother go dark.
Sure. And so does this then allow cartels and nefarious actors to remain better hidden?
It allows people to be the same as they've always been for thousands of years, with the ability to trust other people, identify that, and have their own privacy.
I love it. Like the good old days when you could walk into the bank and say, hey, Hal, I need a loan, shake hands, and walk out the door without 37 pages of paperwork.
Right? And be able to do that
with trust
on the new scale of everyone connected together. We know how to trust you and I.
Uh-huh.
We know how to trust a small amount of people that we can identify
and vet
their actions over time. And now we've just, you know, that ability of a human limits out at about 200 or so to be able to trust that many, have a cognitive ability of how to trust that many people. And the people who are the most talented in business have a bigger ability in that area.
Sure.
And that's what's traditionally made people more successful.
Emotional intelligence.
But now, that's a good connection.
Yeah.
Now we've connected how many million people, how many billion people all at once?
Yeah.
We've lost that ability.
Yeah.
We're talking about the new tools for that trust on the scale of the technological revolution.
Love it. exciting.
We'll close at that.
Yeah, exciting things ahead. Awesome, awesome.
I hope you enjoyed that rather candid conversation. I had a lot of good points in there and some good stories that I like to tell quite often that I don't get to talk too much on the air about because I'm always interviewing guests for you. But thanks for joining today and have a great day.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are my own and are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.